Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Friends of Kevin Radio Show. The Friends of Kevin Radio Show helps promote businesses, nonprofits, and artists. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send me an email to kevin@friendsofkevin.com. To learn more about the Friends of Kevin Networking Group and to see a list of upcoming events, please visit the website at friendsofkevin.com. So excited to get my longtime friend John Blake with us from Tyler, Freed, Hart & Rogers. Good afternoon, John. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate you having me on.
So, John, why don't we start at the beginning? Why don't you tell us a little bit about the firm?
Sure. Thank you. Tarlow, Breed, Hart & Rogers is a business law firm. We're 21 attorneys. And one of our mainstays is, one area of our mainstay of our practice is estate and tax planning and business succession. Many of our clients are family-owned and closely held businesses of all shapes and sizes. We have a few publicly traded companies that we occasionally do work for, but for the most part, it's in that group of the family-owned, closely held business. And the firm is kind of built to address the needs that those particular clients have, and we're organized into practice groups. Probably the biggest group represented in the firm is our estate planning group, which handles our drafting of wills, trusts, and also tax planning advice, both on the income and the estate tax side. They also handle some business succession issues, passing a business along from one generation to the next. We have a corporate practice group which handles mergers and acquisitions, private placement work, as well as just the general corporate governance issues and work that might be part of just the day-to-day operation of a corporation. We have a commercial litigation group which handles general business litigation, contract disputes, as well as a fair amount of estate and trust litigation, both on the trustee side as well as on the beneficiary side. And then the group that I'm a part of and I chair actually is the real estate and finance group, which handles essentially all manner of real estate, anyone looking to acquire, permit, lease, finance, or sell commercial real estate. We also do some residential real estate, although we don't do any of the mortgage, residential mortgage loan work, but pretty much the gamut of anything real estate related, as well as business loans, both on the borrower and the lender side. So, again, kind of built to serve those the needs of those closely held businesses.
So I want to talk a little bit about the commercial real estate market. So what type of trends are you seeing in the commercial real estate market in the greater Boston area?
Sure. From what I hear from other real estate professionals I deal with on a regular basis, it pretty much, I think, echoes what is common knowledge that in, the metropolitan Boston area, the market is very strong. If you drive anywhere near the Seaport area, you'll see just an explosion of commercial growth there, a lot of new office buildings and a lot of amenities to go along with that, and a lot of apartments down in that area, as well as in the North Washington Street area up by the TD Garden, and pretty much anywhere else that can fit it. It's very strong right now in metropolitan Boston. And that's pretty much true also all the way out to the kind of the 128 belt. You're seeing very low vacancy rates, very good absorption rates, so things aren't generally staying on the market too long as in terms of lease space and for offices and the downtown Boston and that 128 belt. So it is very, it's been a very good period. There are hearing some rumblings of maybe some softness or some people expecting a little bit of a slowdown, but for the most part, it is very, It is very competitive if you're looking for Class A space in that area. As you move a little bit west, you may start to see a little bit of, from what I'm hearing, vacancy rates may start to vary, and it depends particularly on the property and the locale. Really, the kind of the drivers are rents and amenities. Amenities becoming, I think, more of an issue these days because as businesses try to compete for employees, what they offer in terms of amenities, on-site dining options, maybe dry cleaner, bank, things like that. Those are all very attractive offerings for employers, and to be able to offer that is a big plus. So they look for that in commercial space, and not every in that far outside of Boston, not every property is going to have everything that you might find inside of 128, but there are some suburban office parks that are starting to become more and more accommodating in that regard. And I think one of them, if you look at, say, Cross Point and Lowell, that's done a tremendous job of increasing their options, amenities, and they've certainly done well attracting a lot of tenants there. So that's in a nutshell kind of what I've been hearing and seeing from my own experience.
Now, how about trends for the retail properties? Is that different?
Yes, it is. In fact, retail properties have been struggling. As the retail market goes, so does the retail property market. And, it's no secret that, there's been some very high-profile bankruptcies. Obviously, Sears being one just recently, and Toys R Us, another one that was a longtime retailer and used to be a 20, 30 years ago, used to be a something you'd see in a lot of shopping malls. And
absolutely.
It's kind of been fallen by the wayside. So we've actually, in fact, my firm is presently involved in matters that are tangentially affected by those two bankruptcies. We've got one of my colleagues is working on a couple of deals that may be repurposing those spaces formerly occupied by those retailers. So it is a it can be a devastating effect on a plaza that had those as anchors, particularly Sears. If a mall had the Sears and there were, it was the primary anchor and Sears shuts down, and although I think they're still operating most of their stores, but as they are starting to close stores, and Kmart is part of that as well, as they start to close those stores, the other smaller tenants in those plazas will basically suffer because traffic tends to dry up, and the landlord suffers because he's not getting the rents to take care of the common area maintenance and other maintenance upkeep of the building, of the plaza in general, I should say, and it can be a problem. And certainly when there's a bankruptcy involved, that kind of takes on a life of its own. It can have issues of timing that as the bankruptcy kind of winds its way through and there's a plan may come into place. It may be some time before a decision is made on whether or not to close a store or keep it going. And during that time period, that indecision, things aren't getting done, and so these smaller tenants can be drastically affected. And it's as I said, there's two examples recently. There was another one, Zoots, which recently went bankrupt. There were a number of locations, they stay I think there's a couple instances where I've seen, you know, some of their stores are still closed, but the particular location hasn't been administered yet through the bankruptcy. So it that can be a tough one. So you're starting to see, I think, maybe some of these retail places being, you know, repurposed. You know, some of the urgent care centers now coming in are starting to, you know, become prominent in all these some strip malls, other you know, gyms, and things like that, fitness centers. So the retail landscape is changing, and then retail properties are changing along with it.
So now, John, how about when people are considering leasing space, some commercial tenants, what are some of the things they should look out for so they make sure they understand what they're signing up for?
Sure. Well, similar to what I was just discussing, I mean, I think you want to you kind of would be forward-looking and kind of look at the mix of your fellow tenants in the plaza. There is a, you know, in the retail leasing world, there's a concept called exclusives. If you are, you know, an independent, you know, pizza shop and you are successful and you wouldn't want the plaza owner or the landlord to go and lease a Pizza Hut at the other end of the plaza because it's going to hurt your business. So, you know, in some cases, if you are, you know, a big enough tenant, you can maybe negotiate to say that, you know, you'll be the only, you know, pizza and sandwich shop, or maybe if you're an independent shoe store and, you know, you may not want like a DSW. Typically, it works the other way. Then, you know, DSW is the one that says no other shoe stores in the plaza, or you know, Pizza Hut or Bertucci's, you know, another retailer who is not as prominent as it once was, but you know, they typically the bigger players get the exclusives. But you know, as you're a smaller tenant, you may want to look at the mix and see if, you know, you'll have this. If something changes, you want to make sure you're not going to be impacted by that. You always want to be on the lookout for, you know, any permitting issues when you're first leasing up retail property, making sure your use is allowed, or any property for that matter. You want to make sure your use is allowed in that particular zone from a zoning perspective. You want to make sure you have enough parking. Sometimes that there's a large parking area, but sometimes there's dedicated spaces. You want to make sure that you have what you need, and particularly if you have something like a dry cleaners where people are clearly running out in and out of your store all the time quickly, you know, that you may have some exclusive spaces close to the store. You know, another kind of key issue for tenants is, you know, typically a lease will be either, you know, a gross lease where your rent is all in for, you know, taxes, insurance, and operating expenses. That's one way that it can play out, but more typically, I should say, is it's a triple net lease. So you'll pay your base rent, and then on top of that, you'll pay some taxes, insurance, and operating costs. And so you want to keep an eye on the landlord's operating costs historically, how those have run, how they increased over the years. And you know, we have one of the big unknowns, or one of the things that can go very wildly from one year to the next, is snow removal or things along those lines. There are other things that are more like repaving or landscaping, things like that, are more regular from year to year. But if anything that gets passed through to the tenant, you want to make sure that you kind of know what's historically what those have been over the years, and you want to make sure that you can minimize any surprises in the future. And then for you know, future growth, if you are doing well, you may want the ability to expand your space. You may want to have an option to take additional space if it comes available, or if somebody else is leaving, you may want, it's called a right of first refusal, to lease additional space. So that's another, you always kind of have to be looking ahead down the road with leases, because that's generally speaking, your lease costs are going to vary up and down over the over time, and your needs may vary up and down over time. So you want to try to be ahead of that. Likewise, you know, if you're come to the lease term, you may, generally speaking, if you're sometimes newer businesses will take a lease term of a shorter duration. If things go well, you may want to have the right, or if you think things may go well when you sign up your lease, you may want option periods in the lease. And you know, the big issue there is, you know, what's the rent for the option period? If you're there for 5 years and your business is going very well at the rental rate you're paying, and you decide to stay, you know, the question is, well, what's the rent going to be for those option periods? Sometimes it'll be set when you sign the lease. Sometimes there'll be an agreement to an agree at the time you exercise the option. So those are also considerations that need to be thought of, you know, when you're going into a lease.
So, John, we got about 20 seconds left. Let's grab your contact information before we let you go.
Sure. You can reach me. My direct dial number is 617-218-2061. My email address is jblake, J-B-L-A-K-E, at tbhr-law.com.
John, really appreciate you taking the time to call into the show. And as always, thanks for being my friend.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Have a great day. Bye now.